Spiritual Life Center. Transforming lives as we love, serve, and remember who we are.
One heart.
We greet you in the name of all that is good, all that is sacred, and in the warm and loving energy of this community, Spiritual Life Center. If you're joining us for the first time, we especially want to welcome you because we know that you are not here by accident. You're here by divine appointment. Thank you for joining us on your unique path today, and we hope you enjoy this special message from this past Sunday's service.
I was rewatching the movie Men in Black a little while ago as I was preparing for this talk. And those who know the stories about Tommy Lee Jones, he plays Agent K, and he introduces to Will Smith, who plays Agent J, a device, you know, the neuralizer device. And the neuralizer device wipes out, you know, the memories of anyone around them that they don't want to remember what they saw, you know, because they're doing this secret operation about aliens, and so they need to make sure this stays top secret. Now, the agents are not affected because, you know, they have their Ray-Ban sunglasses, you know. So when the light flashes on, you know, it doesn't affect them. They deflect the light, and then they take their neuralizer, and they turn it on. This is actually a container for a Cuban cigar, but this is as close as I can come to. So don't light it. All right. And it wipes out the memories of their targets. So their minds would be like a clean slate for whatever period of time that they wanted to wipe out their memory. I thought about that today as I was preparing for this topic, Control-Alt-Delete. Because, you know, when we pick these topics, we pick them like many weeks, sometimes a couple months ahead of time. And it sounded good at the time. But I wasn't quite sure what it meant when I got ready to prepare my talk. But I thought about the Men in Black. You know, we're going on with this Faith in Action series based upon Brené Brown's book, The Gift of Imperfection. And as I look at that Control-Alt-Delete, it's kind of like a spiritual neuralizer. Because when we want to reboot our computer and start afresh, we want to wipe out all the gunk that may have been gumming up the clean operation up until that moment. In the same way, I think if we want to really live that wholehearted living that Brené talks about, which is living from a place of worthiness, we have to start with a clean slate. Because oftentimes we've accumulated this belief of unworthiness. Something that we've learned along the way, but it's not who we are. And I think in order to do that, we have to activate our own spiritual neuralizers, so to speak, to unlearn that which no longer serves us. I know we call ourselves Spiritual Life Center, but we could also call us the SAC Center for Spiritual Higher Unlearning. Higher Unlearning, that's what we're doing. Because we're here not to really learn anything. We're here to unlearn some of the things that don't really serve us for moving forward. We're here to unlearn lack and limitation. We're here to unlearn fear, doubt, and worry. We're here to unlearn that we're not good enough. We're here to unlearn all the ways that we may have been moving through life trying to protect a false belief about ourselves, particularly the belief of unworthiness. You know, a lot of our unworthiness comes from some of the misguided notions that we have about religion and, you know, what I would call kind of spiritual religious abuse. You know, the idea of like original sin. And people want to say, where did that begin? You know, we know it's original, but where did it start? You know, sometimes people point to something in the psalmist wrote in Psalm 51, which says, behold, I was shapen in iniquity and in sin did my mother conceive me. Well, this is all based upon the idea of what I call the Bathsheba what do they call the Bathsheba Gate? You know, back then, you know, it had some, you know, we had Watergate, we had Bathsheba Gate, we got some other gates going on today. So we have to know the context in which this was said. You know, David spoke those words or wrote those words, at least attributed to him in the Psalms. And at the time, he was the king of Israel. And he had an affair with a child and had a child from a married woman named Bathsheba. And he was attempting to cover up his indiscretions. And he arranged for the husband of Bathsheba to go to the front lines in battle and then have his troops abandon him. And therefore, he would be killed and David would have Bathsheba all to himself. Well, after some reflection, because he had a conscience, David became remorseful. He was remorseful for his dastardly scheme that he had implemented, and he was beginning to feel really bad about himself. So he made that statement in Psalm 51. But eventually he snapped out of it. But it was a point where he began to say that this was not the truth of who I am. It's just an indication of how he felt that particular day based upon some missteps he had taken in life. So he had a very low self-concept. And he expressed that low self-concept in the words that were in that psalm. But this idea of unworthiness or being inherently flawed is not something just in the Abrahamic tradition. It is in other traditions as well. But what we want to do, we want to let that idea of original sin not seep into our minds, because when it does, it becomes how we see ourselves. We begin to live that out. That self-concept begins to become our reality in our lives. And then we believe there's something inherently wrong with us, and we stop treating ourselves with absolute compassion. And sometimes we project that belief onto others and treat them less than the unrepeatable expressions of God that they are. That's the shadow side of consciousness. We want to bring that to the light so we can begin to see the truth. When we believe on some level that we're not good enough, not worthy enough, we start looking outside of ourselves to fill a void that does not exist. I remember reading a while back about a millionaire in the tech industry, you know, who had everything. And so it seemed, looking at from the outside, he had one of the smart houses and, you know, all the accoutrements that money could buy in his life. But for some reason, he did not feel good enough because he compared himself to the billionaire that was down the street. You know, but Ernest Hemingway said something to the effect that there is nothing noble in being superior to your fellow person or fellow man. That true nobility is being superior to your former self. We want to always look at how we can become better than we were yesterday. And we can take this idea of nobility and use it as an antidote to this flawed belief that there's something not right with us. You know, I remember reading, you know, in Lessons in Truth, the line that Maya Angelou used to talk about how it helped transform her life. And I think it was in the chapter on the nature of God. And there's a line in there that she read over and over again to really overcome her things that were holding her back. And that line said that God loves me. We want to hold that as the truth about who we are. And when we accept that, we understand this statement. That God does not love me because of what I am. I am because God loves me. I am because God loves me. God does not love me because of what I do. God does not love me because of my religion. God does not love me because of the right words I have in an affirmation. God does not love me because of what I create. Each day we want to wake up understanding that we are loved already just the way we are. So we want to use our own spiritual neuralizer, so to speak, to unlearn any belief that we're not worthy or not good enough. You know, Brené points out the need to unlearn or to let go of our need for certainty so that we can tap into our intuitive and our faith faculties. Get it on out, James. She writes that faith is a place of mystery, where we find the courage to believe in what we cannot see and the strength to let go of our fear of uncertainty. You know, I think the certainty, the need for uncertainty has its origin in a desire for absolute control over everything around us. But somebody told me that if you want to have control, the best thing you need to do is don't. don't control. It doesn't mean that we don't try to change things we do not like. Rather, we don't want to needlessly fight that which we cannot change. So we invoke that serenity prayer that says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You know, Buddha said something to the effect, at least my paraphrase of it, said, all suffering is a result of wanting things to be different than what they are. We're trying to make it different. You know, I remember years ago that my favorite aunt had passed away. And I was with my nephews at the time, and it was very challenging for them to accept that she had passed on, gone on to the next dimension. And so they wanted things to be different, and they were frustrated, and they were, you know, I could sense that there was something they wanted to do to change that. And I realized that we needed to go through a ritual, you know, to remind them of all the wonderful things that she had done in their life, in their lives, and all the things that they can always remember and hold on to. And the reality is that she is a spiritual being. And even though we could not see her in the flesh, that her presence would always be with them. And that began to release their need for things to be different than what they were. They were able to go with the flow, so to speak. And I think there's freedom in that. You know, letting go sounds simple, but it's not always easy. I was reading a book by a gentleman named Tim O'Brien. He wrote a book called The Things They Carried. And he wrote about being a veteran of Vietnam. And like many others during their 20s, during that era, he was drafted into the armed services. And he shared that when he arrived in Vietnam, he stepped into a situation he didn't know whether he was going to live from one moment to the next. And during his tour in Vietnam, O'Brien noted that, you know, 85 to 90% of the casualties of the men around him didn't come from gunfire from others toward them. They came from landmines. And many of his fellow soldiers who were there, he said, that, you know, they were more athletic. They were more suited for war. They seemed to be tougher than he was, you know, because he said, look, I didn't like even going out camping when I was growing up. I didn't like living in a tent. I couldn't stand bugs. So he was in all of this foreign area. And for some reason, others did not survive, but he did. He said, as good as they were at being soldiers, he said, I concluded it came down to somewhat of luck, but also following my inner guidance. His fellow soldiers in front of him, as well as those that were behind him, stepped on landmines, causing their death or loss of limbs. But he tapped into his inner guidance during all of that turmoil. And that experience taught him this. It taught him to let go of absolute certainty while at the same time opening himself up to his inner guidance system. Fortunately, most of us don't have to deal with uncertainty that lead to life or death situations, you know, like he was faced with, like Tim was faced with in his experience. But all of us are probably going to encounter uncertainty at some times in our lives. We want to know how to deal with that. You know, I remember when I was thinking back in my own life when I was a lot younger then, early 20s. Seemed like it was just yesterday. Time goes by really fast. But I remember I came out of college and I was working for a couple of years because I wanted to, you know, go to law school. And I had worked for a couple of years, 2.5 years or so, and I saved up enough money to go. And about 2 months before I was supposed to leave, my father died unexpectedly. You know, I saw him in the morning going off to work. Then I came back at the end of the day, and he was on life support and expired a few days later. And my family was going through some challenges financially and needed money, so I just released all the money that I had saved up to help out. And I believe, at least at that time, that my vision for going to school was over. I didn't know quite what to do. And I was trying to work out ways and calling the school to try to make it happen. Nothing was working. And I felt, because of that uncertainty, I had a lot of anxiety. And eventually, I think I just got exhausted and just didn't focus on it anymore. And I calmed my mind, and I somehow listened to this guidance that said, just pack up your stuff and go anyway. So I drove up there, not having any money, and I enrolled in school. Needless to say, I had no idea what the outcome was going to be because I really didn't have any way to pay for it. So anyway, to make a long story short, I went back to the folks in the administration, and they were able to work out some way for me to finance, for me to get through. And that happened despite my previous calls for support, because I called them earlier, and they say, no way that we can help you, was basically what they were saying. But I think the key to successfully navigating through this experience and letting go of my need for certainty that it turned out a certain way was that I was able to follow that guidance that led me to do what I came there to do. I think as we look at this chapter, this topic, it's really about the need of unlearning the belief that we need to know with certainty what everything is going to be like, how everything is going to turn out, but cultivating and trusting our intuitive and our faith faculties that are always there. It's about getting ourselves out of the way. It's about letting go and letting God. You know, I'm reminded of a story by Carl Jung, the psychiatrist. And he talks about the idea of the rainmaker. And he said that for 5 consecutive years in this particular village, they experienced a drought. There was no rain. There was no water. The ground was breaking up and breaking apart, and nothing would grow. And the people were starving. Their life essence was being diminished because there was no rain. And the village called on many rainmakers, and all of them failed to bring about any rain in that village. But one day they heard about a special man. He lived in a very distant village, and they asked him to come and bring rain to their village, and he came. And he stood on the land, and he looked about, and he felt about that land, and he built a little tent. And he entered into the tent, and for 4 days, he just sat in the tent. And on the 5th day, it began to rain. It began to pour. And the ground soaked up the moisture, and it became fertile. It became plentiful again, and it began to bear much fruit. And they asked the rainmaker, what did he do? How did he cause the rain? Everyone else had come there and they had failed. What was it that you did? And the rainmaker responded, I did nothing. I did nothing. It kind of reminds me of what Lao Tzu said, something to the effect that he who can perfectly practice inaction, all things are possible. And so the rainmaker said, when I came, I saw that the village was out of harmony with the heavens. I went into the tent. I got in harmony with my divine being. And on the 5th day, the rain came. He said he did nothing. And I think he's saying to us today that as we scan our life and we see things that are amiss, we see things that are uncertain, we see things that are discordant, we see things that are not quite to our liking, we want to control and make it happen in a certain way. We need not leap into busyness or try to make something right from an anxious, controlling space. But he's saying, be like the rainmaker. Align yourself with the heavens. Align yourself with wholeness. Align yourself with the isness of God. And then you'll see magical or mysterious and synchronistic things take place. You will see things that are amazing. And inner coherence will begin to happen, and mighty miracles will take place, because our life will be an environment for that kind of mystery to take place as our life experience. No longer getting caught up in what I call secondary causative factors. And that simply means this, that, you know, the thing that we want to happen, the thing that we want else to happen, we do this to try to make that happen. And we try to do all this to make it succeed, trying to control everything. Too much work. We end up manipulating people. We want to go to first cause. We want to go to God consciousness. And whatever needs to take place will take place, and we'll be like the lilies of the field, spinning and toiling not. We get in the flow. And then something evolves from us being in tune with that something that is beyond words. That's just another way for God. When I say, something told me to do this. When you hear that feeling, when you feel that, something is that presence. Something is that intuitive nature within us. It's the natural order of life, the natural order of our universe, which is always in balance, which is always beautiful, which is always lovely, which always begins to break out the possibilities for us. Because when we get there, what we've done, we press the control, alt, delete button, wiped out all the previous beliefs that we have, and tapped into the all-knowing something that is beyond words, but knows the answer even before we come up with the question. We put our trust in that power. We put our trust in that presence. We put our trust in that loving energy that is always there for us. And when we begin to do that, our life begins to unfold in its right and perfect ways, because you can't outdo this presence that we call God. Peace and blessings to you.
We are grateful for the opportunity to share with you today and hope you've taken something from this Sunday's message. If you'd like to hear more from Spiritual Life Center, be sure to click subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening from. You can find out more about our community on our website at www.slcworld.org. We look forward to being a part of your continued spiritual journey. Wherever you are, God is, and all is well.
Spiritual Life Center.